When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
The T-Biz podcast delivers T-news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. U.S. climate commitment is questioned at COP29. Argentina's tea harvest is off to a good start. And FAO's annual food outlook shows increased prices for coffee and tea. Plus, tasting insights with Karush Marushka. Karush Marushka is among the foremost tea tasters in the world and a brilliant teacher. As a student of his craft, he has always followed the mantra, practice makes perfect, so perfect your practice, which describes his apprentice days when he tasted up to 1,000 cups of tea daily. His expertise over four decades extends well beyond the ability to discern quality tea. Seeing synergies across all links in the beverage chain has enabled him to develop a sharp and holistic appreciation of ground realities, constantly pushing boundaries and, quote, asking the right questions to constructively challenge the status quo, end quote. As the former head of global tea expertise at Lipton Tea and Infusions, our guest today is in demand as an advisor, educator, and judge of tea competitions. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia Tea Estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
Plans to withdraw from the 2015 Paris Agreement were viewed as a setback this week as delegates assembled in Baku, Azerbaijan, to attend COP29. The annual gathering sponsored by the United Nations seeks to coordinate efforts to reduce global warming due to greenhouse gas emissions. The world is on track to once again set a record as the hottest on Earth in modern times. For the first time, average temperatures will exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming compared to pre-industrial times. According to the New York Times, scientists say nations must cut emissions by 40% by the end of this decade. Instead, global greenhouse gas emissions soared to a record 57 gigatons last year. Quote, the consequences of that warming are being felt on every continent, end quote, writes the Times, citing torrential rain in Brazil, flash floods in Spain, hurricanes in the U.S., and expansive wildfires. Financial aid for developing nations, many of which grow tea, is a focus of the talks attended by world leaders green market investors and climate scientists. On the eve of the event, more than 650 investors with $33 trillion in assets worldwide urged governments to enact policies to prevent temperatures from reaching catastrophic levels. The U.S. helped design the agreement under President Barack Obama. President-elect Donald Trump withdrew from the agreement during his first term, a decision reversed by President Biden in 2020. Almost every country now has a plan to draw down emissions. The U.S. is pumping at least $390 billion into wind, solar, and other clean energy manufacturing. The automotive industry has transitioned to electric vehicles and hybrids. Nuclear power generation is gaining renewed acceptance. And during the last gathering, nearly every country, including the United States, pledged to transition from fossil fuels. The Paris Agreement is a pact stating that nations of all levels of wealth share responsibility for causing climate change. Individual countries set emissions targets. Targets are not legally binding, and there are no penalties for failure to meet goals. In 2017, no country followed the U.S. withdrawal from the agreement, and none have indicated they will do so in 2025 when Trump takes office. Withdrawal requires 1 year's notice, meaning the U.S. exit would not be official until 2026. The scientists say temperatures that trigger extreme weather will only stop if emissions decline. Beyond that threshold, the world risks a significant increase in drought, heat waves, wildfires, and erratic rain, all of which have an outsized impact on tea. Business insight. Exceeding the 1.5 degrees Celsius, 2.7 degree Fahrenheit warming threshold for a single year differs from the goal adopted in the 2015 Paris Agreement. That goal was to cap warming at 1.5 degrees Celsius on average over 20 to 30 years to stave off the worst effects of climate change on humanity, including extreme weather. This year, a United Nations report said that since the mid-1800s, the world has already heated 1.3 degrees Celsius on average. That's 2.3 degrees Fahrenheit. The Argentine tea harvest began in October with good weather and high yields per hectare in Misiones, the heart of the country's tea-producing region. Automated harvesters and favorable terrain enable Argentina to supply about half of the black tea consumed in the U.S. The country has optimized production by adopting vegetative propagation using cultivars with yields as high as 2,500 kilos per hectare. For decades, the harvest averaged 70 to 90,000 metric tons annually. However, the demand is declining as consumers drink less and less flavored sweetened iced tea. Last year, Argentina exported only 50,000 metric tons. Export revenue fell to $58.5 million last year, down 10.6%. Growers shut down production mid-season after fulfilling their contracts. Now, Argentina needs to find new export markets to maintain previous volumes. The domestic market is limited as citizens favor yerba mate by a wide margin, consuming 5.9 kilos per capita annually compared to 250 grams of mainly black tea. Sales and traffic manager Pedro Newell at Don Basilio SRL explains that long-term relationships with buyers enable producers to balance supply and demand accurately. He said, quote, Argentina tea producers have had good production for years. It was only last year that we had to finish harvesting before the season ended, and only after we had produced what was contracted, end quote. Don Basilio, owned by the Yuklovich family, is a tea and yerba mate plantation with a history that dates to 1935. There's plenty of capacity to expand production, says Newell. Quote, as long as the U.S. continues to demand iced tea, Argentina will remain a key supplier, drawing on decades of expertise and production capacity to meet this market's needs. We are not prepared to move away from a market that, although no longer growing, still represents our highest volume demand, end quote, he said. At the same time, we are open to exploring new markets and co-developing products tailored to specific requirements. He explains that the company is exploring new export partners. Expanding into markets like the European Union presents particular challenges as compliance with their strict PA regulations significantly raises our production cost, he said. Ensuring compliance requires manual field cleansing involving teams of 50 to 70 people, manually removing weeds across plantations. Don Basilio supplies tea for iced tea blends to Unilever Ecaterra. Chile is a big consumer of black tea, importing $50 to $75 million annually in the past 3 years. In 2021, Chile imported $7 million worth of Argentine tea, about 10% of the $63 million Chileans spent on tea imports that year. In contrast, Chile imported 74% of its yerba mate from Argentina last year. Business Insight. Argentina is a compelling example of how origins that conform to the demands of destination markets can shape their supply chains efficiently to prosper in every conceivable way, until the market does an about-face. Prices of commodity beverages, including cocoa, coffee, and tea, boosted the global import food bill to more than $2 trillion, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO. FAO's Food Outlook 2024 report indicates that import expenditures on cocoa, coffee, and tea are anticipated to increase by 22.9% this year, accounting for more than half of the $2 trillion overall increase in value terms. Quote, that reflects soaring international prices for these commodities due mostly to weather conditions and logistics issues. Cocoa prices reached almost four times their 10-year average earlier this year. Those for coffee nearly doubled, and those for tea rose 15% above their usual long-term levels, end quote, according to FAO. The Economist Intelligence Unit, Tea Forecast, projects black tea prices will average $2.83 per kilo in 2024, up from $2.74 in 2023. The World Bank reports the October 2024 average price for tea globally, which includes both black and green teas, was $2.31 per kilo. Food expenses were also buoyed by higher import costs for fruits and vegetables, according to the Food Outlook, released November 14th. Meanwhile, declining import bills for cereals and oilseeds offered some relief to lower-income countries. High-income countries account for two-thirds of the global food import bill and will face a 4.4% increase in 2024, while the bills for upper-middle-income, lower-middle-income, and low-income countries are likely to contract. FAO's latest forecast points to favorable outlooks across most basic foodstuffs, although global production systems remain vulnerable to risks from extreme weather events, rising geopolitical tensions, and policy changes. These could tip delicate demand-supply balances and dampen prospects for international trade in food commodities and global food security. The FAO's biannual publication offers updated forecasts for major food staples, trade, utilization, and stocks, and explores topical themes. The latest issue features an analysis of fertilizers, noting sharp drops in quotations for nitrogen products, which closely track natural gas prices and potassium fertilizers. However, phosphate fertilizers have not displayed a broader decline due in part to ongoing trade barriers. Overall, in September 2024, a basket of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium price series had declined by more than 50% since their April 2022 peak. Download the 75-page publication free at www.fao.org. Next, Arvinda and Intharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India News Update for the week ending November 15th, 2024. LB Brewers from Goa, India, has teamed up with Taiwan's Jim and Dad's Brewing Company to introduce India's first bottled tea beer called Maka di Oolong Blanche. This beer blends Taiwanese red oolong tea with Belgian blanche brewing techniques and will be available only in Goa and Taipei. The beer is priced at 150 rupees and with 4-5% ABV should appeal to craft beer enthusiasts. LB Brewers' last launch was the Maka di Rocket Rice last year, and they are firmly looking at securing a top position in the global craft beer market. The company was founded in 2017 by brothers Aditya Ishan and Anish Varshney. In other news, Solidaridad Network Asia and Indian Tea Association have announced the region agri-certification launch scheduled for 15th November. This was announced at the Indian Tea Association's annual general meeting last week when Chairman Hemant Bango said that carbon credits will offset the price deficit between cost of production and price of tea. Solidaridad's Managing Director, Shatadru Chattopadhyay, said that they expected to cover 100,000 hectares in the next 3 years and 400,000 hectares by 2030. Lakshmi Tea and Russell Tea are expected to be a part of it, and the certifications hope to improve plantations' resilience to climate impact, generate carbon credit, and continue access to the EU market by meeting European green regulations. And lastly, the Assam state government just launched mobile medical units for tea garden workers and their families in residing in remote areas. The program includes 80 of these mobile units to serve 514 tea garden areas. And each unit will offer a range of services that includes free medicines, diagnostic tests, and medical consultations, and will be offered at no cost to the workers.
And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack, steep simply and conveniently.
Karush Barushka is among the foremost tea tasters in the world and a brilliant teacher. As a student of his craft, he has always followed the mantra, "Practice makes perfect, so perfect your practice," which describes his apprentice days when he tasted up to 1,000 cups of tea daily. His expertise over four decades extends well beyond the ability to discern quality tea. Seeing synergies across all links in the beverage chain has enabled him to develop a sharp and holistic appreciation of ground realities, constantly pushing boundaries and, quote, asking the right questions to constructively challenge the status quo, end quote. As the former head of global tea expertise at Lipton Tea and Infusions, our guest today is in demand as an advisor, educator, and judge of tea competitions. Karush began his career in tea in 1985 with Brook Bond India Limited, shortly after the Anglo-Dutch major Unilever acquired the storied brand. He worked for 20 years in India, with 10 years at all six of India's tea auction centers, as a taster and tea buyer, and at the company's blending and packing factories as a tea blender. He then relocated to Dubai, where he spent 8 years as Lipton's beverage supply chain director, buying, blending, and packing tea markets across its Asia and Africa region. Over the next decade, his work in the UK focused on consumer research, recipe design, building a tea culture, and training a global cadre of up to 80 tea tasters across Lipton's integrated tea business from bush to brand. He has traveled extensively, partnering with producers and sourcing sustainably certified and organic teas from the world's most exclusive network of growers. He holds a degree in economics from Mumbai University and plans to return soon from the UK to his home in India. Krish, we've known each other for many years, for which I'm most grateful. As listeners are about to discover, you are a masterful teacher, yet I recall you describing yourself as a student of tea.
Even after 40 years, you know, it's uncanny, but the truth is that in any subject matter area, the more you know, the more you realize how little you know. And that's something which has stayed with me. So I think I've remained a student of tea, respectful of the traditions, respectful of the craft. But at the same time, I've always kept an eye to the future in terms of, you know, what's new out there, what's evolving out there, what's somebody, you know, trying to craft differently out there. So there's a lovely appreciation of tradition and trend in terms of my approach. I've always stayed hungry to sort of taste more tea. You know, when I'm on my tasting bench, it's what gives me most joy. If I'm surrounded by people whom I can take through a guided tasting and provide some context with which they can better understand the nuances of tea, that for me is very, very rewarding.
Listeners want advice on tasting tea and learning what makes tea taste good. Will you share your perspective?
First things first, I think there is no right or wrong. You know, as they say, beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, one person's good tea may not necessarily be another person's good tea. It depends on how your palate has been conditioned, what your memory structures are, what your associations with flavor are. The best way to learn about tea is to taste it. I mean, that's what we learned on the bench. And the more you experiment, you know, you're bound to find, you know, your sweet spot. You're bound to find your flavorite, as I call it. And I think once you find that, you know, there's no turning back. You know, the tea that you were drinking in the past, you know, you will not go back to it once you actually discover the dazzling diversity and the flair that tea has. So whether it's a, you know, black tea, a green tea, a white tea, a yellow tea, an oolong tea, whatever it might be, I would say as a novice, when you're going into the tea industry, be prepared to experiment, but then also be prepared to be surprised. You know, go in with an open mind, don't have any preconceptions, slurp as many teas as you like, and I'm sure you will find something which is particularly sort of drawing you in. You know, there is a tea for every palate, every price point, and every person. And if you haven't discovered it, trust me, it's still out there. Just go on experimenting and you will find it. Once you find it, there's no turning back.
What do you tell someone who asks, how did you become a tea taster?
I mean, that's obviously not something which you can ever plan for. I think most senior tea tasters around the world have probably got into the profession, you know, accidentally or by chance. They stumbled into the profession, as it were. Because it's not something that, you know, you can get a degree for. It's not something that college counselors will ever advertise saying, you know, go into becoming a tea taster. A tea taster job is rarely ever advertised. You know, in my case, I stumbled into it 40 years ago back in India. And it was, you know, at that time, I had no idea what I was getting into. It was something which I was told you learn on the job. You know, you grow on the go. And the more you do, the better you will get. And guess what? You'll be tasting some tea. You'll be traveling around the world. And best of all, you'll get paid for it. So, you know, what's not to love with that kind of a job description? So, you know, you stumble into it and then you look at your peers, you know, you're as a young management trainee in those days with a large company like Brooke Bond in India, your job was not to sit on the desk. Your job was, you know, look at those hundreds of teas being lined up all through the day. And whoever senior taster is tasting on whichever bench, join him. Somebody might be tasting, you know, some or Assam Orthodox teas on another bench. There's some Darjeeling teas on another bench. There's some CTC teas. You know, just go there, do there, imbibe, listen, and try and develop your art of association, because that is what tea tasting is really at the end of the day. That's what we were taught. You know, we were taught. And one of the things which has stayed with me from the very early days is I was always told that tea tasting is a bit like playing golf. So, you know, you're really competing against yourself. And that was something which appealed to me. This was not something where I had to depend on someone else or where someone else could trip me up. You know, this was a battle I could win because you're playing against yourself. So the more honest you are with, you know, how you're doing, it's like your golf handicap. You know, you're assessing for yourself, you're immersing yourself. So it's a battle you can win. That's something which appealed to me. So, you know, the bottom line was practice makes perfect. So perfect your practice. So that was the mantra which I grew up in, which was all about taster tenacity. In those days, it was a big company. So there was always hundreds of cups of tea being slurped every day. And at times, you know, we would have to taste up to 1,000 cups of tea a day. I mean, so we would call it the five S's of taster tenacity, which was see, sniff, sip, swirl, and spit. The more you did, the better you got. There really was no rocket science in it.
Let's talk specifically about quality. I spent some time in Sri Lanka last year and had lengthy conversations with exporters concerned that the blends that made Sri Lanka famous now contain very little high-quality, high-grown Ceylon or Chinese quinoa as ingredients because somebody said, good tea's too expensive, so let's remove it. Consumers won't notice. What's different about tea blends today than 50 or 100 years ago?
I think the reality is, you know, tea is ubiquitous. You know, it's grown in 30, 40 countries around the world, but it's, you know, drunk in 200. Quality is subjective. I don't think good teas have ever gone out of fashion. In fact, when I joined the tea trade, you know, 40 years ago, that was the time when tea used to be packed in tea chests. And you won't believe, I mean, in those days, one panel of a tea chest always had emblazoned and stenciled on it saying, it pays to buy good tea. Just six words. They were there 50 years ago, 70 years ago, always on one panel of a tea chest. And that's not changed. Yes, the specialty tea industry is a little more nuanced in terms of, you know, appreciating things a little more holistically, what I call the sort of seven P's of any tea, which is, you know, the provenance, the plantation that it comes from, the plucking, the processing, the actual product attributes, but then also the people attributes and the planet attributes. So, you know, tea quality does need to be looked at holistically. It's, yes, it is all about the sensorials and the flavor. And again, in terms of the flavor, I think people need to understand what contributes to flavor as we experience it. So flavor is a combination really of taste, of texture, and of aroma. So, you know, taste plus texture plus aroma is really what gives you, you know, the flavor profile of any tea. Because what you taste on your palate is the five sort of basic tastes, you know, sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and more increasingly umami. That's just the taste because that's what your receptors on your tongue pick up. But really when you're cupping tea, you know, we slurp it in to allow it to sort of almost get into our sort of nasal cavity, which is where a lot of the flavor and the aroma receptors are located. And that's what, you know, so you might get a sweet tea on your tongue, but then it'll turn floral or fruity in your nose. I think people need to understand very simply that, you know, taste is, people sort of use the word flavor very loosely, but it's really a combination of taste and texture, which is on your tongue. But then also, most importantly, you know, the aroma, which is actually your nose, which is why, you know, when we tea tasters have a cold and our nose is blocked, you know, we can't taste because 80% of taste is actually smell. I don't think good tea has ever gone out of fashion. In fact, if anything, in the last few years, I'm looking at more and more brands and establishments putting a lot of effort into the quality of their tea blend recipes, you know, and their ingredients. And as long as that continues to happen, tea will continue to build respect.
Consumers seeking premium beverages are looking for something distinctive. A phrase I hear in discussions about fine wine and specialty coffee is, it's more than a score. Intrinsic values are hard to quantify. You can't assign a 96 or a 94 because that does a disservice to aspects that are better described than measured. So talk about the importance of distinctiveness in discerning good quality tea.
If you travel around the world, you know, you find teas which, you know, really sort of have a signature character. They have a very clear sensorial direction. And as you evolve as a tea taster and you open yourself up to, you know, teas from around the world and different sensory profiles, or almost sort of straddling a flavor wheel, as it were. You know, so you know, if you look at tea, for example, there are, you know, broad families of, you know, florals and fruity notes and vegetal notes and aquatic notes and woody notes and spicy notes. So, you know, it's the sensory space is very, very rich. The more you can sort of experience these and actually feel, wow, I get this. When somebody, you know, back in the day when I was tasting Assam tea, you know, one tea taster would call something, you know, raspberry jam, and another tea taster would call it strawberry jam. But the essence of that character was that, you know, it had that fruity note, which is what I was keen to pick up. And that was down to a certain clone in a certain garden. And week after week, you know, when that tea was tasted, it had that distinctive note. So I think over different teas, over different origins, one learns to pick up these distinctive characters. So, you know, if it's a Keman tea, it's got a sort of a lovely, you know, sort of nutty cocoa sort of a character, which gives it a distinctiveness. If it's an Uva tea from the high elevations of Sri Lanka, again, it's got this lovely, balmy, wintergreen character, which really spikes out. So, you know, every tea has got, you know, it's got all the attributes. It's got some mouthfeel, it's got some texture, it's got some flavor, but there will be a spiking out note, which sort of gives itself its unique identity. And as a taster, I love to explore it, whether it's a, you know, whatever the tea around the world, it's this unique identity you're looking for. If there are some teas which are smoky, but then some amount of smoke is actually a little desirable at times. It's only when it goes over the top and it gets, you know, completely burnt that it starts to taste negative. So, you know, you really need to sort of understand the calibrated intensity of flavor. So first, I would say, recognize the families around tea, almost like a flavor wheel. A flavor wheel is a lovely aid to have. It's like a visual compass, a diagrammatic lexicon of tea's sensory space. Every tea has got this signature character, which is what, you know, when you source tea from around the world, you are looking for that signature character. You know, will this tea drive a certain amount of color in my blend? Or will this other tea drive a certain amount of mouthfeel? Or will another tea drive up the sort of aftertaste? Or will another tea, you know, drive up the sort of nose elements to it? So, you know, you're cherry picking elements and you're cherry picking teas from around the world when you construct a recipe, just like a perfume. You know, you'll have some base notes, you'll have the body of the perfume, and then you'll have some distinctive top notes, which give it a signature character. And that's really no different when it comes to tea.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of Tea Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the Tea Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.